Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on his farm he had a tractor, E-I-E-I-O. There was a putt-putt here and a putt-putt there. Here, putt, there, putt, everywhere, putt-putt.
Not really. You never know from year to year what your income's going to be.
Our costs are going up and our margins are getting narrower.
If you can afford to start farming nowadays, you can also afford to retire.
And on his farm he has some crops, E-I-E-I-O. There's a corn, corn here, and a wheat, wheat there. Here a bean, there a bean, everywhere a bean, bean.
And while many in the administration want to expand exports, they're very cognizant of the consumer influence.
If we ask the farmer to produce it, we ought to let him export it.
I'm willing to sell the Russians anything they can't shoot back, if they'll pay cash.
The Garner Ted Armstrong Program. Radio and television commentator Garner Ted Armstrong presents the issues of modern agriculture as seen through the eyes of the American farmer, Senators Robert Dole and Hubert Humphrey, and leading agricultural spokesman. Now, the American farmer. Caught in the middle.
You've heard all of the jokes and little ditties about Clem Cadiddlehopper, the clod-hopping farmer who takes a bath once every other week or so, whether he really needs it or not. But you know, it's time in America, with rising food prices, we take a look at America's farmers. They're feeding not only the United States, but much of the rest of the world. And it's time we began to realize that farming is truly big business. It's not uncommon these days for farmers to be dealing in assets that run up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and as a matter of fact, it wouldn't put a farmer too far above the average if he had assets running in the neighborhood of about $1 million. Today, a farmer, a graduate, perhaps, of an agricultural institution such as some of our state colleges, might have to know a good deal about chemistry, about biology, not only about farming and agriculture, but about all the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, vagaries of weather, and various types of diseases that can attack plants. He's got to be a mechanic, an engineer, a salesman, and know a good deal about marketing as well. Farmers have to be really big businessmen these days. You and I ponder over an investment in a $6,000 automobile, while a farmer may pilot a single tractor or combine that costs more than your home. You worry about fluctuating prices in your supermarket, while last year the average farmer in the Corn Belt stood to lose $20,000 in income if he sold his crop at the wrong time. You or I worry about installment debts of a few hundred or a few thousand dollars. It's not uncommon for a farmer to owe his bank sums ranging up to $500,000. Today's farmer is not interested in sitting on the porch watching the corn grow in the back 40. He's out to compete for your food dollar as well as the ruble, peso, mark, franc, and yen. He's interested in world hunger and international commodity deals, as well he might, for the American farmer is the most dominant figure on the world food scene. The United States is far and away the world's largest corn producer. This year, the United States corn crop will be about 5.7 billion bushels, and that's nearly 45% of world production. The United States is also the world's largest producer of soybeans. This year's crop was almost 1.5 billion bushels, nearly 75% of total world production. In wheat, the United States is actually the world's second largest producer, growing just less than 15% of the world's annual crop. What is surprising to most people is that the world's largest wheat producer is by far the Soviet Union, annually growing about twice as much wheat as the United States. The fertile plains of the United States, on the other hand, produce such a surplus of wheat that we export over 65% of our crop. That accounts for over 40% of all the wheat that moves through the international marketplace. Today, some of the biggest countries, the most heavily populated on the face of the earth, depend upon the American farmer and American agriculture for their very subsistence. It's time we understood that even though the United States farmers have not used, nor has our federal government, our food-growing ability as a political weapon, yet nevertheless, massive grain sales, even though basically an economic factor, do have serious political consequences.
The sales to the Soviet Union have been useful in bringing about the SALT agreements. I think that they very likely have been helpful in causing the Soviet Union to take a standby rather than an aggressive position with regard to negotiations for peace in the Middle East.
I look upon food and not as a weapon, because I think that's a very cruel word. I look upon it as a resource. I look upon it as a very valuable resource in the totality of American economic policy. Now, I don't believe that you should, try to break anybody's back on something like this, or, put the squeeze on, but we're interested in strategic arms limitation. We're interested in some form of arms control. I think we might very well have said to the Russians, look, we can give you an assurance of food supply, but we want to stop this arms race.
The excitement of a rodeo dates back to the days of the early frontier, a time when the rancher or farmer exemplified the simple life. But now the days of the simple farmer are over. Today they are modern agricultural professionals, corporate executives, managers, financiers, purchasing agents, public relations directors, and salesmen. They've taken up new skills in the face of changing problems in food production. Will they be able to meet the growing demands of supplying food to a hungry world? For an authoritative look at the world crisis in agriculture, send for this free booklet. Dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
I hope you'll let me send you this booklet. The operators are waiting right now to take your call if you dial the toll-free number 800-423-4444. If you live in Hawaii, Alaska, or California, please dial area code 213. The number is 577-5225. The booklet is absolutely free of charge. We'll have it on its way to you right away as soon as we receive your call. Well, a new importance to the American farmer on the international scene is directly resulting, of course, from Cornucopia America and our ability to feed a great deal of the rest of the world as well as ourselves. Prices have been rising recently on corn, soybeans, and wheat. Higher profits have been along the way. In 73, for example, it was a record year for profits. 74 was still high, though down a little. But higher prices have not made farming a more financially stable industry. As a matter of fact, many a farmer would tell you it is less stable than ever before. They have been receiving a little more in profits, but they've also had to spend a great deal more to produce what they sell. Fertilizers, which remember are oil-based, have been up as much as 85% above the previous year, and this was during the time in the spring when planting was going on. Anhydrous ammonia, I'm standing before tanks that contain that liquid fertilizer, are up 225% above what they were only 2 years ago. And remember, too, that anhydrous ammonia is used extensively on corn, which in turn is not only a major food grain, but used for cattle feed through the entirety of the United States. Pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides, many of which are oil-based, are up, generally more than double what they were only a couple or 3 years ago. Machinery has risen by about 35% in 2 years. You can spend $40,000 to $50,000 or $55,000 for a combine, depending upon how large it is and how it's equipped. You can spend from $20,000 to $40,000 or more on a tractor. Same comment. And it's changed, too, the picture of farming in the United States. Many and many small farms have been disappearing, while huge, gigantic spreads of tens of thousands of acres have been appearing more and more commonplace. That obviously simply because of the rising costs in heavy equipment, of the need, therefore, to harvest more acres and produce larger profits simply to sustain the tremendous overhead and the investment on larger farms.
This equipment is big now, and you need more acres to cover your fixed cost and equipment.
It takes more acres, more bushels per acre to maintain the profits that we need to stay ahead of the inflation of the products that we have to buy in order to run a farm.
Yes, I think that's very necessary. When we spend today $20,000 for a tractor that 5 years ago cost us $12 or $15, we find it necessary to try to find some more acres to work with that tractor to try to pay for it.
But you need the big equipment for timeliness in order to get the job done on time in case you have foul weather or something to keep you out of the fields in the spring when you should be planting.
A good young farmer is not looking for 160. He wants a larger acreage than that. And it's necessary for him to put so much capital into equipment, and that's his trouble. He has to
spread the cost of that equipment and the maintenance of that equipment, the interest cost, over more acres, or he just can't make it.
Another area which has risen quite a bit, which shows up in the production cost, is the fertilizer and fuel.
The shortage of the energy has raised the price of our petroleum products and our fertilizer, especially the fertilizer, to the point that it really makes you get down and do some figuring. You use that pencil pretty regular to try to see to what extent you can utilize these products and still maintain a profit.
There's no way that we're going to make it in the future unless we can get the price of our product back up or the cost of our production down. And really, with the economy the way it is, we see very little hope of lowering our cost of production. It's a matter of getting the cost of our product up where it belongs.
Our costs are going up and our margins are getting narrower. We have to have more volume to make a profit in order to meet the raising costs that we have to pay.
We think about $3 corn, it sounds like a lot of money, until we realize that in some of our crops we have got $250 to sometimes $300 an acre expenses by the time rent is figured in. And if you do not have $3 corn, you are in bad shape.
This is a constant pressure on us, and a squeeze on us to get enough production and a high enough price that we can come out with a little bit of profit so we can stay in business.
There's one thing that doesn't make any sense at all about this business of farming and cattle raising, as in this operation of feeder cattle in feed pens to be raised for the market and our table. And that is that the most basic and fundamental industry, essential to man, that of producing the food that comes right out of the ground that we have to survive, should be such a fantastic risk and a gamble, one of the most unstable of all businesses or industries. You know, there's an awful lot more gambling going on in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas these days than Reno and Las Vegas put together. Think of it from the farmer or the cattle rancher's point of view. Even though he meets all the obstacles successfully, even though weather is fantastic, and though he brings a crop or cattle to market, the prices fluctuating so wildly in the market, the slightest nudge from supply and demand can change all of the pictures, and he can be subjected to total financial ruin through no real fault of his own. Produce a bumper crop, it may save him from the poorhouse, and believe it or not, a bumper crop may put him there. The farmer has no union, no contract to guarantee costs and prices and wage increases and the like to protect him, and so he can be ruined by the whims of the marketplace.
Our markets vary so much. It used to be that cattle prices, for example, may go up or down 5 or 10 cents on a given market day. And now we'll find that our markets jump anywhere from 50 cents to maybe $1.50 in a given day.
A lot of people lost money last year, either didn't have the finances to go back into cattle feeding, or they were afraid they'd have another great loss. So consequently, them people that don't have replacements this year from last year are going to really be the losers, and it might take them many years to get back what they lost last year feeding cattle.
Well, in spite of weather, I turned a decent crop, but I need better prices to cover next year. What can you do for me?
Well, money's tight. Maybe you could get a break on shipping costs.
No way, mister. I'm doing all I can to absorb diesel fuel increases, but there's...
Look, you can't expect me to process this at even last year's prices. Costs are up. Packaging, ads, labor...
Well, if I raise my shelf price more than others in order to help you, the competition will kill me.
You want helmets for this? Well, I'm sorry, but I'll just have to get by on less. This is absolutely...
As the economics of agriculture gets out of hand, we need to be aware of all the factors that touch us individually and collectively. You need to read the free booklet, World Crisis in Agriculture. Call 800-423-4444, toll free, 800-423-4444.
Well, if you let me go broke, you don't eat.
Let me send you this free booklet. You can have it right away by dialing the toll-free number 800-423-4444. This booklet on the world crisis in agriculture talks about the entire situation around the world, of the economy of the world, the impending drought and famine cycles that are predicted by some specialists. It also deals with monoculture and the Green Revolution. It talks about what's wrong in agriculture as well as what must be done if mankind is to survive. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, you should dial area code 213. The number is 577-5225. Anywhere else, pick up the phone right now and dial 800-423-4444. Well, 1975 promised to be an absolute bumper year for most farmers in the United States. With foreign shipments and sales of grain, prices promised to remain high, and it appeared as if even the cattle market was coming back somewhat so that many cattle ranchers could expect to be in the black. But government is still a big worry for the farmer. They have to worry not only about weather, about rising costs and higher production costs, but their biggest worry today is what is the federal government going to do?
The biggest thing bothering the agricultural producer is government involvement in the marketplace. We're being told that we have a free market system. Producers should produce to the maximum. They like the sounds of both. They'd like to do it, but every time the price moves, they see government intervention in the marketplace.
I think the consumer fails to realize that the farmer also goes to the grocery store today, and we can see those rising costs too. And I think that rather than put the finger on the processor or on the distributor or on the wholesaler or the retailer, they go right back to the farmer, and he's the guy that's to blame for the whole thing.
I'd rather say it a different way, I think. I think we're caught between the consumers and government, because consumers have a terrific influence on our government policy.
Farmers are consumers, but when you look at them separately, they're only about 5 to 6% of America's population. Reside on farms and have any input in the production of food commodities. And so if you're looking at it from a political standpoint, you worry totally about the consumer.
I believe the American farmer, if anything, is subsidizing the American consumer, because we all hear about they want cheap food and cheap food, but they expect us farmers to raise it for nothing. And someday this has got to stop, or the American farmer is going to be in real bad shape.
So I say to the American consumer, of course, it's in your interest to keep the farmer on the farm. In other words, it's in your interest that the farmer make a reasonable profit, not some excessive profit.
Remember, agriculture, while it's made up of millions of small entrepreneurs, in total is big business. We get all excited about the automobile business when something goes wrong, and we should. I mean, nobody wants to see an automobile business off or workers without jobs. But the assets of the automobile business, as compared to the total assets of agriculture, are about 1/6. The total assets of the automobile industry are around $80 billion in round numbers. Of agriculture, over $500 billion. And yet, there's so little attention at times is given to this tremendous economic factor in the United States called agriculture, with its distribution, its processing, and all that goes with, and its production. It's all tied together.
And many feel that food policy is too important to leave to the Department of Agriculture. So number one, the labor unions got into it, the consumers are into it in a way, the State Department and Secretary Kissinger are definitely in it. The President has set up a food policy board in which the Secretary of Agriculture just 1 out of 8 who established food policy.
I think one of the major problems that we have to face is the fact that we are a minority group of people. We have to go in and fight our own battles.
To what degree, Senator Humphrey, does the American farmer influence government decisions?
Well, the poor soul doesn't have very much political power. Really, he doesn't. He almost stands at times helpless before government decisions.
Primarily, farmers are worried about two things. They're worried that politicians may move to establish price-depressing surpluses, which has happened many times in the past, or they're worried that Washington may curb exports in order to keep domestic food prices low.
There are some who advocate setting up, in fact, Senator Humphrey would advocate setting up a grain reserve. I oppose this as being sort of a damper on the market, to depressing prices.
I have always believed that we should have a strategic reserve. I think it's sound economics for the agricultural economy. It surely is good for the consumer because it lends itself to price stability. It assures those that buy from us that we're a reliable exporter, and it puts a damper upon commodity speculation.
We should have a carryover, a reserve, call it what you will. If you like it, you call it a reserve. If you don't like it, you call it a surplus. If you're neutral about it, you call it stocks. So I will be neutral and I will say we should have some stocks, that these should be larger than the very low levels that we've had in the last couple years.
I don't think food reserves are necessary. When we had food reserves, they were called surpluses, and everyone wanted to get rid of them because they cost us so much to maintain.
I think production is the biggest grain reserve we could ever have. We have the capability to produce. We have the capability to expand production. And if we have a profit system in the country, we will produce.
I think there should be some reserves in the United States, but I think they need to be in the hands of the farmers. I don't think they should be under government controls.
My proposal would have about two-thirds of the reserve held by the farmers themselves and about one-third by the Commodity Credit Corporation. And these crops could not be released until a certain set of circumstances set in, namely where there was genuine shortages that were causing hardship and distress and highly inflated prices. The farmer is entitled to a fair price, and I do not want to see a reserve program used to break down a fair price.
For decades, the American farmer has been used to living amid surplus in a nation that perennially told him he produced too much. But in the last 3 years, the farmer has become internationally minded. Agricultural experts in the U.S. have risen dramatically. Now, rather than living in a nation with food surpluses, he feels he operates in a world with food shortages. But by exporting his crops, the farmer has forced the American consumer to compete with consumers around the world for food. Exporting has meant rising food prices in the United States. For this reason, the farmer is afraid that his export door will be slammed shut in the narrow interest of consumerism.
And while many in the administration want to expand exports, they're very cognizant of the consumer influence.
The world, it is an open market, and everybody should be bidding for our food.
It's really the only positive factor we have in our balance of trade payments with foreign countries, and this is another reason why exports are so critical.
And when we have a surplus, it certainly should be exported if we're going to maintain price. And also, it's certainly the Christian way to do. There are millions of people in this world that are hungry. If we have a surplus, we should get it to them.
In reciprocity, what benefits do we as Americans receive in such foreign transactions?
Well, we receive, of course, better incomes for our farm people, which is important. They have this added outlet. We receive the foreign exchange from our sales, which helps us to buy the high-priced oil that we have to import.
Export controls really hurt us because we just got our export company rolling. We're starting to make some sales, made some contacts, and the embargo was placed on shipments of grains to foreign countries. And immediately some of the buyers that we had said that, well, we would place a bigger order with your company, but we feel that your government might put an embargo on again, not let you ship the grains, so we're going to keep on buying from Argentina and Brazil and South Africa, so that they have a door open in many places. And this, of course, cost us quite a large volume of sales.
If we did not have this export market, American agriculture would be poverty-stricken. We are a reserve agricultural producing country. By that I mean that our land is so productive and the vast areas that we have that are available for production make it so that we would produce quantities far beyond what the domestic market could consume.
And I think over the past months we've seen, unfortunately, this administration really having a sort of a yo-yo policy on exports. One day the president says that you're going to have free access to markets, the next day he's imposing some direct or indirect export control. I don't want anyone in this country to be without bread because we've sold everything. But on the other hand, if we ask the farmer to produce it, we ought to let him export it.
Food exports are especially controversial when they involve the Russians. Union leaders, fearful of rising food prices, have refused to load grain on ships bound for Russia.
But whenever you put the Soviet Union a sail to that government, you raise a lot of red flags, and I say that literally. I think that many people who think we should sell our wheat to anyone in the world might draw the line on China, Red China, and they might draw the line on Russia.
It's a subject of controversy because every time you do anything with the Soviet Union, it seems to be controversial. But I think it's time that we understood that the Soviet Union is going to be a food customer for somebody for a long time. It is impossible for the Soviet Union in the foreseeable future to produce an adequate amount of food and fiber for its own economy and its own people. The reason is quite simple. That about 85 to 90% of the tillable land in the Soviet Union is in a latitude or an area north of Minneapolis, Minnesota. In other words, the growing season is short. We sell larger quantities to Japan, you know, every year than we do to the Soviet Union. But the Japanese take it every week, a little every week, constant flow of shipment. Now, what we're trying to do with the Russians is to do two things. Get them to buy on a more orderly basis, a routine type of purchase, and then to be sure that they're not going to just buy this year and not buy next year. In other words, have a continuity of purchases. The first duty of government is to see to it that we have an adequate supply of food and fiber for our own people at reasonable prices, to the consumer as well as the producer. Then after that, I'm willing to sell the Russians anything they can't shoot back, if they'll pay cash.
Just what is a food crisis? Starving Africans and people in India? Well, hardly, the way most Americans look at it. It's when prices in the supermarket rise by 40% in just 3 short years. Now that, people think, is a real disaster. And they want to blame almost anybody and everybody, beginning, of course, always with the farmer when they look for the villain. But they blame agribusiness, they blame commodity speculators and the big grain companies, multinational corporations, foreign governments, our own government, any president since Herbert Hoover, environmentalists, consumerists, they all come in for their share of name-calling. And of course the middlemen are placed at blame too. Truckers, packagers, food processors, labor in itself, just big labor, supermarket chains, these are all suspect, Earl Butts, the Russians, and some people even want to blame God, who they say is fouling up the weather. Well, the days in the United States of cheap food are over. And inflation is the culprit. And in inflation, everybody is guilty. Since 1972, the price of wheat in one loaf of bread has only risen by 1 cent. And yet the price of that loaf of bread has gone up 11 cents. And all the way down the line from the time the food is in the field to the time it gets on your table, whether it's the farmer, the processor, packager, the truck driver, and all the assorted people who deal with these people, the retailers and all, take their cut. So it ends up costing you 11 cents more instead of that 1 cent more it cost to put the wheat and the bread in the first place. If you're wondering, will food costs go down? The answer is no. Not unless we were returned to a narrow form of nationalism in the sense of allowing only the law of supply and demand to really decide food prices. And we apparently are not willing to do that, nor are we willing to even build up any emergency national food reserves. In the meantime, in the furor over agriculture, it's the American farmer who is truly caught in the middle.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Gardner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.